The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Hi, Dr. Ray. I love your show.
Let me show you what it looks like to be a holy person, and maybe you'll want to be holy like me.
You just patted yourself on the back.
You seem like an honest guy.
But you're a psychologist. Do you have some advice?
I don't know. I'm not going to tell you what to do.
You're my second favorite Italian person.
I think you have a way of making people feel relaxed.
She needs to feel the consequences of being a jerk.
You know, I was looking for a deeper answer.
Obviously, I'm a failure. Obviously, I'm inept.
Yes. You are awesome. Keep up the good fight, my friend.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
You know what I'm realizing in this stay-at-home, shelter-in-place? We're about 2 weeks away from knowing everybody's true hair color. Think about that. All the ladies who have highlighted their hair blonde, which is well over 50% of them, how are you going to re-highlight it? It's going to go back to brunette. And then all the folks, the color for gray, well, that's going to change. I don't know, just some stuff. Well, good to have you with me here. I'm Dr. Ray Guarendi. Program is The Doctor Is In. It is a call-in program. You can call in, ask questions about situations, persons, peoples, all kinds of stuff in your life. Now, I'm not going to diagnose you. I mean, I'm an eye psychologist. I'm allowed to do that, but I'm not going to diagnose. Can't do that here. Certainly no any kind of extended therapy or therapy itself will not give a second opinion over top of a professional you are seeing. However, we can educate, give some thoughts, ideas. Sometimes it's generic, sometimes it's particular to situations that matter to you a lot. And one other voice maybe can help you. As always, we are allowing anybody to call in with suggestions, insights, ideas on how to better weather this rather unusual period that I'm going to comment on here in a second from the perspective of a shrink. The number, 877-573-7825, 877-57-EQUAL. Now, here's some questions I have. I'm going to couple these with some general social observations. Take them for what they're worth. This is just one guy's opinion. All of this extreme constrictions, orders, mandates to quote unquote flatten the curve, to buy time. I understand that part about buying time. There's worry that some hospitals, not all of course, depending upon where in the country you are, but some hospitals will be overwhelmed. They don't have the equipment, they don't have the personal protection equipment, they don't have the ventilators, all of that. So give a chance for the hospitals to brace themselves, get prepared. All right, I understand that. But then I'm hearing things like, well, we need to flatten the curve. And I've even heard somebody in position of power say, no cases. How can that be? I'd like to hear that question answered. At what point will we say this is enough under control that we can return life to some semblance of normal? And by the way, it won't return to normal. Too many people are made skittish. Too many people are nervous. Too many people are frightened. The media keeps fanning the flames. So as a result, people are just not going to pour out of their houses and say, okay, goody, let's go to games. Let's go to restaurants. That's not going to happen. That's just not going to happen. As one who is professionally familiar with what can happen in fears, in media fanned fears, it takes a long time for people to get past them. So that's the first thing. At what point will we say, well, we've got it enough under control? Now, my thought is the only time they'll say that is if they come up with some kind of therapeutic treatment that either dampens the symptoms or can actually eliminate the symptoms. That's our best chance. If we simply go with social distancing and all of the things that we're saying that people can do You know, here in Ohio now, we only can have so many people in a huge store. So they're outside.
Okay.
So the constrictions continue. Then what? That's the question. Then what? I've not really heard anybody talk about what will be the point where we say we have this enough under control. Because keeping in mind, if this is as contagious as the medical people are telling us, then it doesn't matter if we have it under control. It'll resurge. It'll just go back up again. Well, the good news is it is very low in its mortality rate, very low. However, with the numbers continuously paraded in front of it, it creates a real scary image. As one who deals with an awful lot of folks who are frightened by the media and all of the awful and terrible and horrible things that the media parades before us every day of our lives. This is just the latest, and this is a big one. Have you noticed there's no other news? This is it. For weeks, this has been the only news. There's no other news. Very little, anyway. So, at what point will we say? I've been talking to a lot of people. And, again, it's anecdotal. But the evidence, the consensus, seems to be that an awful lot of folks think they had some version of this several weeks ago. In February. In March. They had it. They were sick. They didn't know why they were sick. It was an odd sickness. A lot of coughing. Fever. It hit its way through. It passed through, and a lot of people dealt with it. I think I had it. I'm pretty sure I had it. Now, as I look back, it was the most odd kind of symptoms I've ever had in my life. I've never coughed like that in my life. I never lost my voice in my life. Some people may wish I would have, but I didn't. So, as more and more people survive this, there is a certain amount of herd immunity that occurs. Will that bring the numbers down more than anything else? Now I'm hearing a report. Talk about scary. And again, you got to know, you got to have some sense of the unreliability of some of these testing procedures. Now we're hearing that 51 people were identified. I think it was in Korea. That tested positive for the virus again after having it and passing through it. Oh boy, the media is going to run with that one. Now it'll never go away. At some point, I think this is going to happen. I think the level of cooperation among people is going to drop. Right now, there's enough fear that everybody's just hunkering down and they're trying to do what is good and right, and they're trying to be charitable and caring and lowering the risk for everybody. That's understandable. But human nature is going to kick in. And more, you're going to have people saying, what is this all about? What's going on here? I can't work. I can't do anything. I can't see my family. I can't visit anybody. What is going on here? And I think more and more people are going to say, is this worth the risk of this? I heard somebody say that this is the number one cause of death in the U.S. How can that be? Are you kidding me? If you look at the causes of death in the U.S. right now, it's really low. 500,000 people died last year of coronary-related illnesses. 500,000. But yet, we don't change our eating habits. We don't change our fast food. At some point, there's going to be a clash. And the clash is going to be, what is this all about? What is this that we are being asked? At what risk? Because the media is very good at putting out the numbers and putting out cases. And these cases scare people. But the problem is you don't know exactly what was all involved in the person who passed away. For example, very high-profile situation not so long ago about a one-year-old who supposedly died of coronavirus. And it turns out it wasn't. The child suffocated. But it wasn't coronavirus. So can you imagine what that did to parents? It scared the heck out of them. Sadly, there are a lot more things children can catch that can take their lives than anything that coronavirus has shown so far. Anything. But yet the media just propagates one example, and it's enough to scare the heck out of young parents. I don't know where this is all going to end, I'll tell you, but there's going to be a lot of psychological, social factors kicking in, involved here in the next 2 to 3 weeks, especially if at the end of April, some of the governors come out and say, well, we got to keep going another month. And then the question needs to be rightly asked. What is the goal? What numbers do you want before you will say this is all okay? As I understand it right now, and I have to check into this, but I heard a statistic that said up to this point in 2020, more people have died of the flu than have died of coronavirus. We shall see. 877-573-7825, 877-57-EQUAL is the number. Give me a call. Would want to hear from you.
Solidarity HealthShare began out of the Christian tradition of neighbor helping neighbor. They're a nonprofit medical cost-sharing ministry in which their members share in each other's eligible medical expenses. Solidarity HealthShare is not insurance, but rather an alternative way to pay for medical costs that adheres to the teachings of the Catholic Church. They'll never share in a medical care that goes against their values and morals, such as abortion, contraception, and sterilization. More information available at SolidarityHealthShare.org or at 844-313-4999.
If you believe in the power of prayer, Ave Maria Radio invites you to look at their website to submit a prayer request at AveMariaRadio.net. Your prayer requests are shared with hundreds at the Dominican Sisters of Mary, Mother of the Eucharist, the Servants of God's Love, the Monastery of the Blessed Sacrament Cloistered Nuns, the Family of Faith Apostolate, and the staff of Ave Maria Radio. Just go to AveMariaRadio.net and click on the Community tab to submit your prayer request today.
Our family had been going through crisis. Little by little, we just found ourselves drifting completely away. I was afraid to go back. I mean, I cried the first time I received the sacraments again. Cried because I was back and because I had allowed God to become a part of me again. It's united our family. There's peace in our home that we didn't have before.
If you've been away from the Catholic Church for any reason, visit CatholicsComeHome.org today.
Abortion.
Pornography.
Embryonic stem cell research.
Corporate contributions to Planned Parenthood. Do you invest in companies that are engaged in these practices? The Ave Maria Mutual Funds do not, and their investment portfolios reflect that. Ave Maria Mutual Funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria Mutual Funds. You can learn more about the Ave Maria Mutual Funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
You know how a lot of times as you get older, you tell the kids, the grandkids, you say things like, when I was a boy, you know the way it was? Well, here's something we can tell. We can say, back in my day, we had so much toilet paper that people used to string it all over the trees in the house of people that they wanted to go after. That's how much toilet paper we had extra. All right. Joan is staying at home. She's in Chicago. She says she can't concentrate. She gets flustered. Hi, Joan.
Hello. Hello, Dr. Ray.
What is this concentration flustering thing? How does that show itself?
I walk room to room. I try to start some project, you know, cleaning up here or there, but go and turn on the news or I check Facebook, and it's just not getting anything done. And for instance, I was going to try to take my mind off things and start making face masks, but I hear such conflicting stuff about it that they do no good, or they are desperately needed, and then I can't decide whether to start making anything. And result is, by the end of the day, I haven't accomplished anything. And
how much stuff are you watching, Joan? How much stuff are you watching?
Well, not a lot of stuff, but like just the president's daily press conference, and I feel my chest tightening every time it starts to get to the when the reporters start asking questions. I'm okay while the president is talking and the doctors are talking, but when the reporters start asking questions, my chest is just tightening.
You're answering your own problem here, dear. I know what you're doing. You're listening to this stuff and you're thinking, okay, I want some hope, a breakthrough, something, good news, give me something.
Yes.
That's what you're waiting for.
Yeah.
And that isn't happening for lots of reasons, and sometimes more than just medical. So given all that, I used to be a news junkie. Oh, my gosh, I'd listen and I'd watch and I'd consider myself very well informed. I have stopped. I have cut listening to the news by about 80%. I'm sick of it. I'm tired of it. I'm tired of the pundits. I'm tired of all the opinions. I'm tired of all the conflicting information. I'm tired of all the complaining. I'm tired of it.
And the economy is going to be ruined on top of
it. It's not going to be ruined. It'll be battered pretty bad.
If we're not dead, we're going to be poor.
Oh, see, that's what I'm... You are prototypical of what I talked about in my monologue.
I ought to call in.
We have shaped you into this nervous, scared Nelly. Joan, are you a Christian?
Oh, yes, and that's the other thing, is that, I'm trying to concentrate on Holy Week. I thought for Lent I'd be reading all kinds of spiritual books and getting holy, but
this is not your world. I know that isn't going to be, for many Christians, a comfort. But we of all people should be less panic-stricken. Because we should recognize this is not our world. And yes, there are risks in our world. But for us to just be ruined and lose our joy because of all the people telling us we're just all just so gonna die. It's crazy. It is bordering on crazy, in my opinion. And as a result, I believe they're gonna look back on this and they're gonna say, you know what? I think we could have handled it differently. I really do. So my dear, my first advice to you, cut out 80% of the news. If you want to hear what the president has to say, listen to him, and don't listen to some of these reporters that remind me of peevish adolescents.
Yes,
that's what they are. They're peevish little adolescents. Well, can't you think that this is... Cut it out. Grow up. That's the first thing. Second thing. When you're going to do something, like clean a room, just clean it. Don't worry about, I'm distracted. So what? You're distracted. Keep cleaning. I know, but I don't know. I don't know. I just kind of sat down for 6 minutes. Okay, then get up and clean it. It's not a matter of how. It's a matter of your will. Just do it. And I think you'll find that at the end of it, you'll feel good about yourself. You'll say, hey, I did that. I cleaned the room. I did it. Quit feeding yourself all of this stuff. Never before in human history have cultures been so able to be shaped by opinions far beyond their home or their tribe or their family. Now you just got all kinds of stuff coming at you from everybody, and it's just shaping the way you think.
Yes.
And sometimes it's messing you up. And the best thing to do when it's messing you up is not to let it get to you. Get it out of there. So there you go.
Thank you. I will try.
That's what I think. See, I'm just another opinion, so. But what the heck. Thank you, dear. Thanks for the call.
Thank you, doctor.
All right, honey. Mika from Gainesville, Florida. She was on the phone Friday. That's right. She called back. And she was asking me about Montessori parenting. Hi, Mika.
Hi, it's Monica.
Oh, Monica. Okay. Just a second. Hold on one second, Monica. Hold on one second. Dan, let's not let this happen again. There. Okay. I had to scold him. Okay. It's the only way he listens. Now, Monica, what's your understanding of Montessori parenting? Did we lose Monica? Monica.
Oh, I'm here.
There you go. Yeah, honey. What's your understanding? Are you there? Hello.
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. What is your understanding of Montessori parenting?
I feel like I'm a little confused by it. I have a friend who's getting certified on that, and she was offering me her services while she's getting certified, but I wanted to make sure this was okay with kind of like the church teachings. And my understanding is that it goes more into, I guess, allowing the children to kind of not do what they want, but not be so, I guess, not to make decisions for them as much as letting them be themselves more and letting them kind of figure out things more on their own. That's kind of like what I'm getting.
That's my understanding, and that's my understanding of a lot of preschool programs and developmental teaching programs that follow Maria Montessori's philosophy, which is child-directed learning. And I would imagine that they would say child-directed child-rearing. It's not something I lean toward at all. I think in a lot of respects, it can drift into the permissive. But from a parenting perspective, I think you would do well to consider what decisions you have to make for your child's well-being, because your child is a child. This is this idea that the children know, the children are better than the grown-ups at knowing which direction they should take in many of their choices. Well, for those things that can be a choice of the child, go ahead. You know, if the kid wants to work a puzzle or she wants to read, fine, whatever. But if it comes down to a matter of obeying mother or following house rules or not being nasty and disruptive, the child's not going to make the choice as far as I'm concerned. I'm going to have conditions.
I also had another question about, I have a 5-year-old and with a very high temperament, and sometimes she could become disruptive, and I'm just trying to figure out what would be the best way to parent that. How to maybe help her become more calm, and, you know, she yells and screams. So there's a lot of things out there on the internet and a lot of experts. So I wanted to get your advice on where should I go to kind of find that particular information.
I will tell you, my dear, when parents tell me they have you described it as high temperament, what they usually mean is strong-willed or difficult or emotional or any number of other adjectives that they use. Mm-hmm. Much of the time, the child is not that. Much of the time, it is the parents aren't confident and calm and firm in their discipline. So the child can be difficult. The child can react emotionally. The child can throw fits. The child can argue. The child can not cooperate. And the parent thinks, oh, gee, this must be the way the child is. And much of the time, it is not the way the child is. And how do I know this? Because 40 years of dealing with parents, when they come in and they all tell me how strong-willed their kid is, and I help them be a better parent, they come back and say, gee, he's nowhere near as strong-willed as I thought. Matter of fact, he's a pleasant young man. So I would suggest, dear lady, that you look at some things that will help you be a more confident disciplinarian. I got a book that'll help you do that. It's called Discipline That Lasts a Lifetime. It's on my website bookstore. Thanks. Thank you, my dear.
Father Benedict Groeschel.
In the church, we speak of seven gifts: wisdom, understanding, counsel, knowledge, loyalty, courage, and reverence or fear of the Lord. When I speak about the gifts of the Holy Spirit, and these gifts come, they give you the ability to go beyond your strength. If you're struggling to be a good person, a good member of your religion, you know it's a struggle and you don't always make it. I've been at it many, many decades, and I still struggle and trip and fall and have holes in my socks. Struggling to be a good person, something that we need help at. And this help comes to us by these gifts of the Holy Spirit.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
How does man fulfill his vocation? Through life in the Holy Spirit, the Catechism tells us. This life is made up of divine charity and human solidarity and is offered as salvation. Man's great dignity is rooted in his creation in the image and likeness of God. It is fulfilled in his vocation to divine beatitude. It is by our own actions, doing good and avoiding evil, freely chosen acts, that man conforms to the good promised by God. Human beings make their own contribution to their own interior growth, the Catechism tells us. With the help of grace, man can avoid sin and grow in virtue. It is Christ who reveals the mystery of the Father and his love for man, thus making man fully manifest to himself and bringing to light his exalted vocation. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
You know how I get a sense that some of these folks holding press conferences, some of these politicians, some of these rulers holding press conferences, there are other motives other than to keep us informed and to give information. It's when they start talking about themselves, when they start talking about their kids, when they start telling you all the good things their kids have done, when they start telling you what they do. That's when I start to think, okay, this is also helping you with your ego. Just the facts, okay? Tell us what you want to tell us, and you can probably do it in half the time it's taken you. All right. Let me go. Diane. Well, wait a minute. Before I go to Diane, I better do this before I forget. I don't want to forget. A lot of our affiliates, a lot of our close to 400 affiliates and our networks have postponed their pledge drives. Understandably. Father Larry Richards told me he had one priest friend who told him that with the churches being closed, he is now at 10% of his financial support. 10%. Come on, people. Don't stop giving to your parish because you don't go to Mass. And the same thing can happen with our radio stations. They live in large part off those pledge drives. As a result, when they have to postpone them, when they can't have them, they're hurting. Please, if you can, go to their website. Go use their apps. Click on the donate button. Give them. Help them out. If you can. Some of us are still working. I'm not working as much. I'm almost semi-retired now. Somebody comes in my office, I only nod and say, half the time. So semi-retired. Actually, I'm not even seeing clients right now. Probably more because of the clients, not because of me. But either way, so please, help out your local affiliates and your parish, for heaven's sake. Diane from San Diego, California. She wants to talk about a woman, a caller, who was on a few weeks back. And Diane, you're going to have to refresh my memory on this. Help me out.
She was pregnant with her first child, and her mother-in-law was not taking no for an answer.
Yeah. Mother-in-law was very intrusive, right, insisting on things, and right, even when she said, no, Mom, now's not the right time, it didn't matter. She just overrode her.
Right.
You got help for me on that?
Well, I was just thinking, listening to your answer and listening to her, what a great exercise dealing with her mother-in-law was going to be to prepare her for motherhood, for being a parent.
So the kids are as intrusive as mother-in-laws?
Well, a lot of people have trouble setting limits and making rules and sticking to them. And it sounds like that's what she was having trouble with her mother-in-law.
Remember, she did say that. She said she felt guilty when she really kind of stood firm. Remember? I don't know if I remember that. Do you remember that?
I do. And I think that's what a lot of parents feel when they're raising their kids, that they feel guilty for sticking to the rules.
Diane, here's a question. Now, I'm sacrificing you as a look-back call, because I want you to address this issue. Why do you think that so many parents now are like that, that they really are uncomfortable with having to set rules and limits and discipline? It's just something that bothers them. How did that happen? I can't believe in human history that's been part of parenthood. What happened?
I think people want to be their kids' friends, and they're afraid that their kids won't like them if they set rules.
But how did they get to that fear? Where did that fear come from?
Well, I know this is a pet peeve of yours, but I think a lot of it has to do with the media. The television shows we watch where, you know, the parents are all so cool.
The experts. I've written a number of books on this, where the experts have in essence told parents, if you do this right, it will all be smooth and it will all be nice and your kids will love you and you really shouldn't have to discipline, as long as you know how to communicate and as long as you know how to use win-win scenarios and reflect active listening, then your kids will all just be cooperative. I think that's what's happened. I think so many parents have been told by the experts that authority is a dirty word.
Oh, I believe that also. I think you're spot on.
I like when a woman tells me I'm right on. That's really good, you know? Yes, dear. Go ahead.
What a refreshing voice of reason and common sense you are in this crazy world.
Well, I appreciate that, but you realize I'm fully aware that you think that because, by and large, our thinking is parallel. But there are probably plenty of people who listened to what I said in that monologue and said, this guy's screwy. This guy's dumb. This guy doesn't know what he's talking about. You got to know that, obviously, right?
That's right. Yeah, we are thinking along the same lines.
And that, you know what? Your compliment to me is really a compliment to you, because you're telling me that I am a voice of reason and you agree with me. So that makes you a voice of reason. So you are really flattering you. Way to go, Diane. That's what
Thanks for turning that around for me. Pointing that out.
Thank you, dear. You're a delight. Thanks for the call.
See ya.
All right, honey. Bye. Sheila. I remember Sheila from KVSS Spirit, that big conference. She took me to the airport. Hi, Sheila.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing good. Yeah, you're saying something like, if you're going to pass away because of this virus, you're recognizing the reality of, well, God's control.
That's absolutely right. You know, I take normal precautions. Clean, you know, sanitize my hands, whatever. But when it's my time to go, I'm going to go, whether it's a heart attack or a virus. Our lives are in God's hands, and that's what we have to identify. That's what we have to hang on to, is that we can take all the precautions, follow the rules, you know, don't get crazy and go, you know, lick the counter at Walmart or something, you know. But ultimately, really, It is God's decision. It is Sheila, have you
noticed? Now, I've noticed this. This is just my limited observation.
Right.
I'm not finding among Christians any different reaction to all of this than non-Christians.
No, I'm not either. And it's very, very sad.
I'm saying the Christians is every bit as panicky.
They are. And you know, then the question in my head is, where's your faith? You know, my big thing is that I shared a little bit in the car with you, the spiritual attacks that I'm undergoing.
I would have thought that I cured you by then. You know, that was close to a 22-minute drive. That was like 11 minutes more than I needed. Sheila, call back, dear. Bless you, honey. I got to run. This is Dr. Ray.
Call to Communion.
Through EWTN Radio, we talk to audiences all over the world. One thing I've found out is everybody in the whole world has the same set of questions. They live the same human life. They all want meaning. They all want love. They all want significance. They want forgiveness. That's the most fascinating thing to me. The same answers work wherever you are throughout the world, because we're all children of God.
Called to Communion with Dr. David Anders, this afternoon, 2 Eastern, on EWTN Radio.
We recently filed a Friend of the Court brief in the U.S. Supreme Court in June Medical Services versus G, a case in which the justices will decide on the constitutionality of a Louisiana law requiring abortionists to have local hospital admitting privileges. We filed the brief on behalf of Priest for Life and Rachel's Vineyard, which provides post-abortion healing for the many people harmed by abortion. As set forth in our brief, Louisiana has a paramount right to protect the health and safety of its citizens, and this includes enacting regulations to raise the standard and quality of care for women seeking abortions. In support of Louisiana's right to enact such common sense regulations, we included in our brief the compelling testimonies of victims of abortion from states across the country, including Louisiana, persons who have been harmed in a profound way by the deadly procedure. These testimonies reveal that such regulations are not only valid, they are necessary. Supporters of abortion often claim that they want it to be safe, legal, and rare. The truth is, the abortion industry just wants to keep the deadly procedure legal. They could care less about safety, and they certainly don't want abortion or their profits from it to be rare. This is an important case because it's the first one in which both Justices Gorsuch and Kavanaugh will be deciding. We can hope that the court will acknowledge that it has overstepped its bounds in many ways on this issue, and that it will begin to introduce more sanity into the case law. I'm Robert Buse, co-founder and senior counsel for the American Freedom Law Center, bringing you this Faith and Freedom Minute. You can learn more about the American Freedom Law Center by visiting our website and liking us on Facebook.
I have been washing my hands so much that I can now see some of the test notes that I wrote on my palm when I was in college. They're resurfacing. I guess I've washed away that many layers of skin. Good to have you with me, Dr. Ray Guarendi. I can't believe I took those notes. I was in astronomy class, too. Named the 9 planets. Got them all on my palm. I had to use a couple fingers. Let's go to Mary from Ohio, Sacred Heart Radio, down there at AM 710 in Cincinnati, Ohio. Hi, Mary.
Dr. Ray?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, I just wanted to tell you that you are spot on. I have been telling my family to calm down and look at the big picture. Don't take my word for it. Go to the Centers for Disease Control, National Center for Health Statistics, and look at the number, leading number of causes of death in the United States. Last year, it was nearly 650,000 for heart disease, nearly 600,000 for cancer, unintentional accidents, about 170,000. Number 10 on the list is suicide, 47,173. As far as people saying, you know, when do our lives get back to normal? You know what, we're going to have to come to a new normal, and that's probably a good thing. Those are just my comments.
Well, I saw those statistics. It's interesting how people don't do things that would lower their risk of death. For example, the way they eat. Obesity. Obesity is a huge factor. It's even more than smoking now in premature death. But people don't consider that or work on that at any level. And something like this, which is scary because it's a rush kind of thing, and it's a lot of unknowns about it. But at the same time, the things that we can control, you're right, we don't. Accidents you can't necessarily control, although there's some component of that. But coronary artery disease, oh my, we could radically reduce that just by our lifestyles. But we don't. I asked my daughter, she worked at Wendy's for years. And I said, Sarah, what is the most popular sandwich at Wendy's? She said, the triple Baconator. Three patties of hamburger with bacon, I believe with mayonnaise. I mean, this stuff could clog your arteries in a day. But you're right. I know that it shows you the power of the media telling us, watch out, watch out, watch out. Death is around every corner for us. And you're seeing a lot of people that are scared. They just are running very frightened. Thanks, Mary. Appreciate the call.
You're welcome.
All right, honey. Mike, Cincinnati again. Mike, this is kind of a medical question, and I have just heard all kinds of answers on this. What's your question,
Hello.
Mike? I got to preface this that I'm not a medical doctor. I'm not a researcher. I can only report what I have heard and read. So your question is?
Yes. Well, and, you know, again, I think let's add one more thing to this. And I think you're a voice of faith and reason. So thank you for,
appreciate it.
And
thanks.
The faith component. But, yeah, it's. I see people driving around with masks on, and I'm thinking,
you're in the car.
Coronavirus? Yeah, they look like a bandits.
You're going to give
car.
It to yourself.
And then there, you know, people walking down the street with masks on. I mean, I can't imagine that virus being transmitted in the public open, you know, air.
Here seems to be the latest I've heard from a highly respected physician. He said, obviously, most of the masks that we use are not the ones that they use in the hospital, like an N95. My daughter is a emergency room nurse, and her equipment that they've finally gotten is much more dramatic than what we would wear. The mask would be better than nothing for perhaps you transmitting the disease, or I shouldn't say disease, the virus, or... Yeah. Reminding you not to touch your face. I touch my face about 20 times an hour at least, because it itches. And I wear contacts. And I blow my nose. So there are all kinds of ways we touch our face. And we do it unconsciously, by the way, too. So the mask probably does two things. Three, actually. It creates a sense of security, protection. It reminds you, don't go after your face. The mask is covering up most of it except your eyes. And three, it probably is better than nothing. But the question is, you know, when I go into a store, I'm not near anybody. I'm not near anybody at all.
Right.
I'm just walking through there. And if I happen to walk by them, and God forbid... I walk by within 3 feet. They're not coughing. I'm not coughing. So it's like all of a sudden we've all have cooties.
Right.
You know, I have people sometimes that I work with, and I walk in and they look at me like, get away from me. Get away from me. I'm thinking, I'm not doing anything that would transmit this to you. I'm not touching anything you touch. I got my hands in my pockets. So unless you put your hand in my pocket, and even that, there's debate on how long this stuff lasts on surfaces. Initially, I heard several days on hard surfaces like steel. Well, now it's down. Now it's not 9 or 10 days. Now it's down to 24, 48 hours, 3 days, 4 days. They're learning. So right. You're right, Mike. That's about the best. I have not worn a mask yet, and there's part of me that maybe that's my stubbornness, which is I'm going to be careful. I'm going to do what's good and right. I don't want to hurt anybody else. But for my own protection, besides, I'm pretty confident I already had it anyway. So thank you, Michael.
Thank you.
I appreciate the call,
thank
buddy.
Thank you, Dr. Ray.
All right, sir. Rachel, you'll be up, honey, when we come back from our mandated two-minute break.
I'm Dr. Stan Williams, and this is the logic of Catholicism. Solanus Casey said, appreciation is as necessary for social order and harmony as are the laws of gravity for the physical world. Did you know that scientific progress owes a debt to Catholic thinking? The crux of scientific discovery is the scientific method, whereby hypotheses are formulated by understanding the order of the universe. If the universe was not ordered but random, as many atheists claim, no logical hypothesis could be derived and no valid experiment could be devised to test the hypothesis. Thus, the Catholic view of a rule-driven universe allows scientific discovery. Today, tell a friend that you appreciate how Catholic thinking has empowered centuries of scientific discovery to improve our lives. And that's the logic of Catholicism. Explore more at AveMariaRadio.net. Under resources, look for me, Dr. Stan Williams.
In Making a Holy Lent, 40 Meditations to Prepare You for the Church's Holiest Season, EWTN host Father William Casey offers a compelling retreat designed to help you answer God's call to be people of faith, prayer, and devotion. Grow closer to God this season with Making a Holy Lent, now available at EWTNRC.com or call us at 1-800-854-6316.
Join today's discussion and engage with producers on the Ave Maria Radio Facebook and Twitter accounts at Ave Maria Radio. Respond to interviews and learn who's coming up on Crest in the Afternoon, Catholic Connection, and other Ave Maria Radio programs. Make it easier by downloading the Ave Maria app on your smart devices. Then just tap on the Facebook and Twitter icons to get plugged in on the things that matter most. That's the Ave Maria Radio app or at Ave Maria Radio. Build the church. Bless the nations.
Dr. Ray Guarendi, thanks for joining me Monday through Friday, 1 o'clock Eastern Time. Hopefully shortly we will be airing fresh Season 9 of Living Right with Dr. Ray. By the way, my dear lady who and friend who handles my website bookstore told me that the interest in the books has gone up. There for a while it was just dead, stopped. And she said, now it's starting to creep back up. I don't know if people are getting used to this new routine and therefore they're heading back into some of their habits. I don't know, because you get thrown out of your routine, it tends to change everything. Okay, let's go to Rachel. She's got concerns about her 12-year-old sister. Hi, Rachel.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine, dear. How about you?
Doing good.
That a girl. You enjoying... Are you enjoying this time alone? You're making the best of it.
Well, I'm a para, an assistant, and at the middle school, and my sister is in middle school, so both of us are working from home. I've been doing a lot of crafting and cleaning up around the house.
There you go. Get the place. Take advantage of it. Get the place looking like you want it to look.
Yeah, exactly. Sorry, those are my dogs in the background.
Does your sister live with you?
Yes, I live with my mom and my sister.
Okay. How long is your... Now, she's 12, and she has said... Mm-hmm. Is it lately that she's had trouble falling asleep, or no, that's she's always had thinking when she goes and lays in bed?
I think over the past couple months, it's been worse than usual.
Mm-hmm.
She just has a hard time falling asleep, she's told me that she, imagines things in her room. She usually... likes to leave the lights on and have a lot of white noise in the background to help her fall asleep. But I could tell she's having a hard time with it.
I did a lot of research back when I was very interested in sleep disorders, sleeping patterns. I'd say several things. One, Rachel, you said that this has kind of done an upswing last month or two, and of course that coincides with the media hammering away at all of this. And especially as your sister has to think, okay, they took school away from me. I can't see my friends. What is going on here? All the grown-ups around me are skittish and nervous. What the heck? So that would make somebody like her, who maybe has a bit of a fretful personality, worse. Okay. First thing I would suggest is don't have the news on when she's around. That's the first thing.
Yeah.
Very, very simple.
I don't know if it's necessarily the corona that she's upset about, but she, you know, she gets worried about, oh, well, what if somebody comes into the house? Or what if there's an earthquake? Or what if there's, you know, the couch catches on fire? Sort of things like that. She says she sees things in the dark or hears things, you know, that she's fretful about it.
Does she, at this age, does she have some kind of faith? Where she believes in God and she believes in her guardian angel and all of those things that would protect her?
Well, not really. I mean, she believes in God, but she's not actively living a faith lifestyle or anything. She just, so I suggested she, you know, try things like a guardian angel prayer, praying for peace, but she's not really into that at her age.
How long does it take her to fall asleep?
Sometimes a couple hours. Sometimes she goes to bed at, you know, 9 or 10, and then she, you know, just she says she just kind of lies there and can't sleep for a couple hours.
What I might do is not let her sleep in. Get her up 7, 7:30. She won't want to. She'll be tired. But that's okay because the next night, it's one thing about this. It's, you know, when people struggle with sleeping, they get shook up. They get shook up because they're not falling asleep. Well, the one thing that happens is that the next night, they're much more fatigued, and they can be more likely to fall asleep quicker. I would think that if your sister is tired the next night, as opposed to, I laid in bed until 11:30 last night, Rachel, and so now I slept until 10. Well, then there's no way she's going to be ready to go to bed at 9 o'clock. That's not going to happen.
Yeah.
So get her schedule set back up again.
Mm-hmm.
So that you get her up, say, okay, but I don't want to get up. I'm tired. That's right. That's exactly right, honey. We want you to be tired. Okay. In terms of, well, she can't say prayers cause she doesn't really, that's not part of who she is. Although you did give her some prayers. I suppose you can reassure her, but none of that works. You know, we got locks on the doors. We've got 135 pound Rottweiler sitting here. By the way, that is an interesting thing. My daughter is 20, and she gets nervous about that. And I say, Lizzie, you've got 200 pounds of two Rottweilers at the top of the stairs. If that ain't the best security system there ever existed, you know. So I don't know.
We have a Sheltie and a Pomeranian. So
oh!
Not much of a security
they're just going to urinate on their shoes. That's all they'll do.
Yeah, or worse, be their best friend.
Yeah, but they bark. They do bark. So, you know, you do get that.
Yeah, that's true. They do a lot of that.
You know, even something maybe as simple as a security system. You go out and get a very, very simple security system, and that'll help her a little bit. But if she's a fretter, and she sits there, and she ponders, and she worries, I don't know of any ways to make fretters not fretters. I think what happens is as they get older, they start to recognize that so much that they think was a risk never happened. Never happened.
Yeah.
You know, nobody ever broke in. There was never a fire. There wasn't a tornado. You know, the couch didn't fall over on them. I would ask her this, Rachel. I'd say, okay, what do you need when you go to sleep to relax, to not be afraid, thinking up stuff? What would have to be around here? What, a security system? 130-pound dog? What would you have to have? Anything? I'd ask her that. Maybe this is your chance.
Will it hurt her in the long run to leave the lights on or, you know?
Nah. Leave them on. Nah, that doesn't bother me. Leave them on. If you need the lights on, go ahead, honey. That's fine. I would maybe take a chance on introducing her to some religion. And say, you know, people who know God and love Jesus, they might not be as afraid because they feel God's watching over them and he's there for them. I might take this opportunity to get my religious foot in the door, so to speak, because I'm assuming that you're probably a little more faith-filled because you listen to Catholic radio. Thanks, Rachel.
Yeah.
Bless you, dear. This is Dr. Ray. I got to go. I appreciate all the company, good Lord permitting. See you tomorrow. Walk with God and keep walking with God. And if you fall down, get back up and walk.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit DRA.com and follow him on Facebook. The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.